there's been a lot of evidence presented that by buying here and there and other places, you have assembled the equipment for a gas-generating your enrichment plant.
Yes.
That could only be used for a nuclear weapon development.
No, not necessarily. Not in the least. In the first case, this program is so small that it will never give you enough enriched uranium to build more than one bomb. Let us assume, for argument's sake, that Pakistan has been able to get enriched uranium. What is it going to do? You know, Mr. Cronkite, it is not only the enriched uranium which makes a bomb. There are 101 stages. I'm not a scientist, and I don't know enough of this, but what little I have been able to gather, there are 101 processes through which you have to go and acquire mastery in technology before you are able not only to produce a bomb, before you are anywhere near it. Then, having acquired, you have got to have a delivery system. The age of 1945 is gone that you can fly an aeroplane and hope that it will not catch up. So Pakistan, from all the evidence that has been produced in this connection, and which I tell you, it is total fabrication.
If any, the hypothetical question, admittedly, but if any Islamic nation had a nuclear weapon, do you think it should share it with the other Islamic nations?
No, I don't think so. Because it is not a question of sharing the religious belief. If any country has, in my opinion, a nuclear bomb, or has the capability of acquiring nuclear bomb, then it should primarily have for its own security. Unless, of course, the relationship is that of United States of America and Israel, that you give a smaller country that much of capability to fight against larger forces. But otherwise, I do not think this should be considered as a toy that you can pass around for anybody to play around with it. It is not.
Mr. President, the Afghanistan offered to Iran and Pakistan to engage in talks that they said would lead to normalization of relations, they hoped, and to speak of a timetable for the withdrawal of Soviet forces, along with a Soviet and United States guarantee of non-interference. Does that proposal interest you?
No, Mr. Cronkite. Not in the present moment, and not in the form it's been given. And this is not the first time this proposal has come. It came recently. But as far as the recognition of the present Afghan regime is concerned, and as far as Pakistan's prerequisite for a talk with Afghanistan is concerned, we are bound by the resolution of the last conference of the foreign minister of the Islamic conference, which laid down that until such time that the Soviet troops withdraw from Afghanistan, all Islamic countries will withdraw the recognition of the present regime and will not indulge in any direct conversation.
One of the difficulties with the free world giving assistance to the freedom fighters is that they aren't a cohesive group in a single exile government, for instance. Can Pakistan be of any help in giving them sanctuary for an exile government, or helping them form one even?
Pakistan is today helping the Afghan refugees only on humanitarian grounds. Much sympathy though we may have, but Pakistan cannot afford to act as a conduit to any military assistance to the freedom fighters. Until such time, the security of Pakistan is guaranteed or is strengthened. And it is because it is no good Pakistan acting out of step without having safeguarded the security of its own region, and it cannot act as a sanctuary unless it has the prerequisites again of a sanctuary.
Well, now, what would it require to guarantee Pakistan's defense so that it could take that role itself?
We have come to the conclusion that whereas we must help the Afghan refugees inside Pakistan territory, until and unless there is an antidote to a superpower inside Afghanistan, I'm afraid the chances of success of guaranteeing the security of a neighboring country, may it be Pakistan or anybody else, would be futile. And it is in this respect that I must say that we have come to the conclusion that it is far better to remain equidistant to the superpower rivalry and help the Afghan refugees on humanitarian grounds rather than plunging into the risks of a much greater or a more dangerous role that may be envisaged.
Wouldn't it help to bring this world pressure against the Soviet Union to concentrate the free world's attention on Afghanistan if Iran would help remove this thorn in the side of relations between the United States and Iran, the hostage situation? Can we do more toward getting those hostages out so that we can get on to this other business, which might, I would think, in the history of this corner of the world and of the whole world, be far more seriously concerned with the Soviet aggression?
It would help. But please don't get me wrong. Because on my own, and Pakistan on its own behalf, have done all what it should have done with regard to impressing on Iran on the question of hostages. There is no question of anybody on moral grounds to defend the continued detention of hostages in Iran. But question must be viewed in a greater perspective, in my opinion. The point of view of Iran cannot be ignored either. And this is what I say, please don't get me wrong. I am not by any chance saying that this point of view of 50 hostages of United States of America should be downgraded to an extent where it can be even ignored. No, not in the least. But what I say is that the priorities must be set right. I do not mean to say by any chance that the lives of 50 American nationals is of no value. No. What I'm trying to say is that the United States of America must see the true priorities in this region. If this region has any strategic significance in the minds of the United States strategists, if this region has any significance to the ultimate interests of United States of America and the free world, then I am afraid the question of hostages should not be viewed on the emotional plane. I very strongly recommend, Mr. Cronkite, that we should view the situation in a much bigger perspective. It is a global problem, in my opinion. The lives of 50 American nationals is as dear and as valuable to me as it is for any United States citizen. But I say that there are much greater things at stake at the present moment. And we should take out the emotional aspects of an election year or of the human aspects of this, which cannot be ignored, I agree. But I think there are much greater stakes involved in this issue than only the lives of 50 nationals.
You mentioned the election year. Do you feel that President Carter's playing politics with the hostage issue?
Without casting any aspersions, I must say that there is a lot of element of electioneering involved in greater issues.
In the Afghanistan issue as well?
I'm not quite sure, but we suddenly find America having ignored all issues as far as the relationship with Pakistan is concerned. We find on one fine morning, United States of America so much concerned with the integrity and the safety and security of Pakistan that everything is forgotten. Then all of a sudden, having Dr. Brzezinski having even fired towards Afghanistan and saying, tomorrow we will roll down these planes towards a possible enemy. And then all of a sudden, everything is forgotten. I fail to understand the sincerity and the reality of the thing. Maybe I'm not so bright.
The United States does have a reason to be concerned about Soviet aggression in this area. You would say, I mean, you don't think that they misinterpreted the Soviet intention in going into Afghanistan, do you?
No, I don't think so. But I think, in my opinion, the absence of the influence of the United States of America, of this region, to which, according to the American strategies, they call as the center of third strategic zone, the absence of American influence leaves American friends to doubt the sincerity of their interest in this region.
Why did you refuse the $400 million of American economic and military aid that was offered after the Soviets invaded Afghanistan?
We found that the offer that United States of America was making was devoid of the credibility and the durability.
What are the credibility, sir?
I would not quantify the credibility. I would qualify it. And in the field of qualification, anything which does not ensure your security and buys you greater animosity, particularly of another country which now happens to be in a superpower, which now happens to be our neighbor, we thought was not credible. And having discussed the details, even the durability of it was doubted.
What would it take to bring America, the United States, and Pakistan together in an accord that would satisfy you and would protect, by your lights and your views, the United States' interest in this corner of the world?
I would put it the other way around, sir. United States of America must first consider whether her interests are served better by the protection or by assistance or by collaboration with Pakistan or not. If they do, and I can assure you that they do, because I have said in so many words that Pakistan is no one to dictate to anybody else. But I can assure you that in this turbulent world, and in this region particularly, which is at the present moment has the germs of a lot of troubles, Pakistan today presents an island of stability. And it is this which I think the United States of America, in pursuance of their interests, must exploit. Because if Pakistan goes, then from Turkey to Vietnam, the name of the United States of America will be hard to hear.
How does that square with your feeling that the Persian Gulf and this dangerous area of the world should be neutralized as far as the world powers go?
No, we are not for neutralization, but we are for a non-aligned policy. And this is what we have been following very rigidly, very sincerely, as far as Pakistan is concerned. But Pakistan forms the back door to the Gulf. And the Gulf has at the present moment, as durable a strategic material in the form of oil, the black gold,
that you can, whatever you can call it. And it is the Pakistan whose non-aligned status, in my opinion, must be maintained and preserved. We feel that we should be equidistant to the two powers and not allow this region to be an area of conflict or superpower rivalry. If it has to be in that context, if it is in some other context, then of course the situation has to be reviewed.
Isn't the Soviet Union the instigator of superpower rivalry here with its takeover of Afghanistan, its move toward the Persian Gulf? Doesn't that require a defensive posture on the part of the United States in this corner of the world?
No, I don't think so, sir. I think it's very clear that the move that the Soviet Union has made of its expansionism in the South is as a result of the vacuum that has been created by the absence of the United States influence in this region. And they have quietly moved into Afghanistan. But perhaps what their intentions are not very difficult to ascertain or to read. I think the move that the Soviet Union has made in 100 years, Mr. Cronkite, the last that the Soviet expansion took place in the South was 1896. And they have nearly taken 100 years to expand, because at that time, somebody stood up on the Oxus and said, this is it. One step this side of the Oxus River, then you are at war with the British Empire.
Well, now, isn't that what the United States almost has said in the same terms right now in regard to Afghanistan?
No, sir.
You don't feel they've made that declaration?
No, sir, no. Then somebody has got to stand up on the Khyber Pass and says, this is it. One step this side, you are at war with so-and-so and so-and-so.
Well, I thought that's what Clark Clifford said in India. I thought that's virtually what Brzezinski said at the Khyber Pass.
I wish Dr. Brzezinski was as sincere in his deeds as he was in his words. And I wish there was a coordination between Mr. Clark Clifford and Dr. Brzezinski. They're both speaking different languages in different countries.
All right, now, let's get back to this. So you're not satisfied with the declarations. President Carter, presumably, to satisfy you, has to stand at the Khyber Pass and say no further.
Not necessarily. President of the United States of America is the President of the United States of America. His word spoken, his word as good as anywhere in the world.
You feel that Clifford's statement was knocked down back in Washington?
Negative, sir. Right.
And Brzezinski didn't go far enough?
No, Dr. Brzezinski went too far. Hmm. I wish his deeds were as good as his words.
What would you like from the United States?
A very pertinent question, I must say. But I would say, in this, from the point of view from Pakistan, the friends of Pakistan, friends of United States of America, would like United States of America to be more assertive, to regain, in my opinion, the position that it seems to have lost in our eyes. And I think that will do a lot of good to the prestige of United States of America, and also will bring in a lot of confidence in the friends of United States of America, if I can.
Mr. President, asking you the impossible, but in a sentence or two, could you tell us what you predict for this corner of the world, Soviet intentions and American reaction and the hopes for continued independence of the nations here?
I will answer this, Ms. Cronkite. By nature, I'm an optimist. But by being in the military for 35 years, I've been trained that for planning purposes, be pessimist. Plan for the worst. We are today prepared for the worst. And for that, I will repeat again that we will fight for every inch of this, of our sacred land. We expect that the countries of the free world will go to town on the issue of Afghanistan. And I'm very hopeful that the Soviet Union will respect the voice of the world. We feel that in this 20th century, when freedom is so cherished, it will not be very easy to swallow. At least a country like Pakistan with 80 million people. And we very strongly expect that the United States of America would exert itself and prove, because and prove to be a superpower. Because it is, in my opinion, United States of America cannot afford to hibernate and go back into the shell. The period of pre-1919 is over. Mr. Cronkite, your country today is the beacon light of the free world, and it has to act in that way. I don't think I can expect in any other words.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Today on Face the Nation, General Mohammad Ziaul Haq, President of the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Walter Cronkite.